Music has a special way of touching our hearts in ways many things cannot. And if you're tuning into this podcast, you probably think so too. On each episode of Classical Post, we uncover a creative mind behind music we find particularly exceptional. Coming to you from New York, Classical Post is created and produced by Gold Sound Media, a marketing and PR agency for the performing arts industry. I'm your host, Jonathan Eifert, creative director at Gold Sound Media, and I hope you find something inspiring in this episode. When most orchestras commission a new work, they usually ask the composer to produce music that fits on a standard concert program, like a 10-minute overture or a 45-minute symphony. But when BBC Earth approached composers Adam Lucas and James Everingham, along with the two-time Oscar winner Hans Zimmer, to compose the score for its latest nature documentary series, Frozen Planet 2, the show's producers needed 6 hours of music. Even for this trio of seasoned composers, that's a tall order to fill. Besides creating a sonic universe to accompany Frozen Planet 2's icy, snow-capped visuals, these composers had to help fulfill the show's core mission, introducing viewers not only to the daily lives of polar bears, penguins, and snow monkeys, but also the ways climate change is compounding the difficulties. In this episode, I sit down with Lucas and Everingham to discuss the process of creating the series' score, which involved more than 100 people working for 3 years while navigating lockdown restrictions. They also share stories about collaborating with the legendary Hans Zimmer, the magical time they spent in the studio with the Norwegian singer-songwriter Aurora, and how they define success. Tell us about writing music for Frozen Planet 2, the BBC documentary featuring Sir David Attenborough. What was your role and how did this whole project begin?
James and I, alongside Hans, are the composers for the show. So we composed the soundtrack, the background music. I think over the last 3 years, we've produced around 5 to 6 hours worth of music for this project. It's a 6-part series, so 6 times 1 hour. And how a project like this usually begins is Bleeding Fingers has done projects like these in the past. It became something that our company's been known for, you know, starting with Planet Earth 2 became a big success. And then following that, Blue Planet 2 and Seven Worlds, One Planet. And I think what people don't know is that we would gather a few people and we would begin early discussions how to pitch for this project. And we are presenting the client with our best ideas that we can come up with. And luckily, in case of Frozen Planet 2, we won that pitch. And so we were set to score the project. And it came on our radar at the end of 2019. And the project released 2 months ago. So you're talking about a 3-year span. And we probably have invested months and months and months and months of thinking, producing music. It was a big, big thing. The most important thing when tackling a show like this is how can you create its own sonic universe just for this show? How could Frozen Planet 2 sound like? And we came up with a few interesting concepts. We looked at natural phenomena, like, for example, snowflakes. Can you imagine one with the, you know, these little branches and the symmetry it has, the fragility? So we looked at that, or we looked at how is ice splintering and fracturing. So we tried to transform this into music, and we worked with London's finest players and in collaboration with Spitfire Audio. Spitfire Audio is a industry leading sample library developer based in London. And we came up with the fractured orchestra, the fractured strings. Is basically flourishes and fractures and little things that sound icy played on musical instruments. And so much more. We had a really great singer on it. Do you want to elaborate on Aurora, maybe?
Aurora, yeah. I mean, you know, an incredible artist in her own right.
Yeah, she's the project's featured artist. Our boss thought by bringing someone in like her could really help elevate the project even more and the music. And she brought so much great stuff into it.
So a question about all of this. In terms of all of this happening, and then in relationship with Hans, are there more people on this music team in terms of writing, or I don't even know like how big this team would be, or is it literally just like the three of you?
It takes a village to deliver a score like this, because it's not just the writing, it's the recording and the mixing and, you know, all the technical elements to fitting all those pieces of the jigsaw together. So Adam, myself, and Hans were the composers. We wrote the music, and then we have a team of, you know, technical assistants and score supervisors. Of course, we have the finance and legal teams here at Bleeding Fingers as well, you know, and their support. Russell, the score producer, score mixers, the orchestrators. Of course, then you have the conductors and the players themselves, the recording engineers. You know, I'm missing vital members of the team, but yeah. You know, it's really...
I think it's a fair bet to say that over 100 people, including the orchestra and everyone, are involved in only the music department.
And that's what's so incredible. Yeah, to point that out to the listeners of the podcast is that if we're dealing with that many people just for the music, which is crazy, you know, I can't imagine how many people were on the actual filming side, you know, to produce and capture all of that visuals. Yeah. So amazing. Yeah, really cool. So do you have any kind of unique experiences when you were working on the project? I mean, I know we talked about what the project is and, you know, your roles in it, but were there any kind of cool little side stories when you were creating?
Well, I want to highlight Aurora a little bit because she was just such an incredible present and an amazing contributor to the music in a way that we hadn't really expected. You know, we worked with her both remotely, you know, since for much of production we were dealing with the COVID lockdowns, but also in person. And we would watch a scene together with her and play her what we'd composed for the scene. And then she would go through to the live room and we would go with her. And I can only really describe it. It sounds pretentious, but she would respond to the scene by singing. And I think we both found that really inspirational and an eye-opening experience to see her just absorb the scene and sing it again and again and again until she really felt that she had achieved exactly the kind of nuance that she wanted to get out of her vocal performance. You know, I really can't understate how much of a privilege it was to work with her on the project and how much of a unique edge having her collaboration and, you know, just the sonics of her vocals in the music really brought to the soundtrack.
It's a really interesting, that process of, so you're in this live kind of studio, you're saying, so she's in London, you guys are still in LA, I guess at the time, right?
Well, she was in Norway for much of production.
I'm sorry, Norway.
With lockdown, but we did also record in person here in LA. Yeah.
But in terms of the process that you were just referencing, was this like a virtual thing that you would kind of get on these like different screens? She would be watching the scene from Frozen Planet 2 as she's like reacting in real time. And then you're kind of capturing that and she's like honing it in. Is that what I'm hearing?
What James described were, you know, we had a few sessions in person and that's what we would do when we recorded her in person. So watch with her together, interact with her. And then, you know, she's a pop star. She's touring the world, right? So sometimes she would send vocals recorded in her bus or from somewhere. And it's a huge variety, but she always delivered. She always provided and so happy to have her on, really.
Let's talk about Hans for a second. I mean, everyone knows Hans Zimmer. Do you have any fun stories that can be shared publicly about, you know, your fun times working and creating with Hans?
Yeah, I mean, there are, you know, tons of stories to be shared. You're talking about someone who has had 30 years in this industry, and there's not a single thing that Hans hasn't seen or experienced. So oftentimes he would tell stories, you know, we face a challenge and he would have a story ready of how he faced that challenge like 10 years ago and what he did back then. So you would draw inspiration from that. Hans is he's a philosopher. He can explain things so well he can explain difficult matters to children in a good way. And you hear this also in his music. I think the biggest learning factor that we had is how can we make the audience feel and not overwhelm them?
Well, I mean, that's what he's spent his career honing is the ability to tell stories with music. And we all kind of decided early on that we wanted it to be the process of not to be too, you know, I know you wanted a fun story, but we are tackling the issue of the climate crisis with Frozen Planet. And we know early on, we knew we wanted to tell the stories of the animals in their habitats in a way that helps people connect with them and care about them in a very genuine way. And that's something that Hans has spent his career being the best at, and something that, you know, he brought to the project that was just invaluable.
Let's pause for a second. Are you an artist or work at an arts organization? I founded Gold Sound Media to help you expand your audience through social media. My team and I work closely with clients around the United States, directly shaping their messaging through customized strategic content. One of our biggest success stories is our work for the Clyburn, where we drove 25 million viewers, making it one of the most watched classical music events of all time. Get in touch to speak with me directly about how Gold Sound Media can help you. Just head to goldsoundmedia.com. Now, back to the show. Last question, as we wrap this up, what does success mean to both of you? It's different and personal for everyone. James, what do you think?
I think, you know, if someone hears music that I've written and has an emotional reaction that's in a very genuine way, then my job as a composer is a success. But particularly, that could be something as very surface level, maybe, and it could be something that has a lot of weight. But, you know, writing music and dealing with like, you know, musical emotions can be quite a delicate thing. And there's a very thin line between being sentimental and being emotional.
Yeah.
So I would say success for me is being able to walk that line and having the audience come away and say, wow, that really moved me. Particularly if, you know, in the case of something like Frozen Planet, it's inspiring conversations about climate crisis. If it's, you know, helping the audience connect with the creatures and the challenges that they're facing, you know, that would be the ultimate success for me.
And Adam, how about you?
I definitely echo what James said. And to me, success also has some sort of freedom to it, or something that is there's really freeing. You know, this can be like a successful music producer, for example, can successfully produce high quality music. And for me, in order to learn that, I had to overcome a lot of hurdles and challenges. So the better I got with making music, the more I liked my own music, the more successful I felt automatically, because it's very liberating to just sit down and you sort of know your tools, you know what you do, you know, it's fun. If you feel free, if I don't want to go to work and feel pressured, or it's, you know, I think that success can mean doing it freely and doing it intuitively. And a lot of people on a strictly business layer, I would say also success means that you can earn money with music, because people start as film composers. It's not a given that you earn a living. Not at all. It's, you know, other jobs, you just start them and in 2 weeks you get your check. If you decide to become a film composer, you are looking at two very rough early years with maybe no income at all.
But also just not just film music, but also just the ability to write music for an orchestra.
You know,
it's not lost on me that I write music and then a matter of days or weeks or months later, I'm stood in front of, you know, 100 people that are pouring their hearts and souls into it. And it's not lost on me the significance of being able to continue, I guess, what is in a way a very traditional thing for a job.
I also want to add, many people think that hard work leads to success. And I don't necessarily agree. You need to pick something you want to work on smartly. You need to make smart decisions on where you want to put your energy and then work hard on achieving them. But I think it's a very dangerous thought that if you just put in the hours, something will happen. The stuff that has elevated my career the most oftentimes was luck and being with the right people and being in the right spots at the right time. And I put in my fair share of hard work, but
in a focused way.
In a focused way. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
That's so true. Because you have a limited amount of time, just like everyone does, and you can either work hard and it's not that great, you know, the result is, you know, whatever, or you can kind of concentrate that and try to use it toward something that has bigger leverage to propel you forward.
I think that's there's a big debate if you should work for free in the early stages of your career. Should you work for free? And I think this principle of pick your stuff and then work hard on that especially applies to that. You have to be able to see, well, if I put in a lot of work into this project, maybe I get follow-up things, maybe I get to know other, you know, I think these can be quite good examples of that approach. Pick smart and work on these things hard.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Classical Post. If you loved it, give us a 5-star review as it helps us reach more people. Also, remember to hit that follow button in your podcast app to get notified of new episodes.